friends, and welcome to another episode of Mumbrella's one-on-one podcast series. I'm your host and the editor of Mumbrella, Neil Griffiths. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We have another big guest on this week's show. Before we get into it, if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening to it from, and be sure to check out the latest edition of the Mumbrella Cast, where we recorded live from the Retail Marketing Summit at the Crown in Sydney. It was a big episode. This is just as big because my guest this week is the Chief Marketing Officer of Fender, Evan Jones. So Evan was kind enough to join the podcast and he jumped on Zoom to have a chat with me about all the things happening at Fender. A little bit about Evan. He's previously worked at Nike. He served as Senior Vice President Global Marketing at DC Shoes, Vice President Global Brand Marketing at Activision, and the Chief Marketing Officer at New Era Cap. But he joined Fender in 2015 and it has been an incredible journey since. So as well as getting a little bit of backstory on Evan's career and the how, what, where, and why of joining Fender, we also got to discuss some of the big campaigns he's worked on previously. 2024 is actually the 70th anniversary of the Stratocaster, that little indie unknown guitar known as the Strat. It is a massive year for Fender, and I got to talk to Evan all about the campaigns that he's worked on, people like Jimi Hendrix, Nile Rodgers, Tom Morello, Australia's Tash Sultana, the list goes on. Evan shares the biggest lessons he's learned from working at Fender and some of his previous companies, how brands can stand out in such a competitive market, and Evan lists some of the most important things he considers when putting together a campaign. I had such a blast chatting with Evan, and I'm so excited to share this episode with you now. Here's my conversation with Evan Jones on the One-on-One podcast series.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
Good. Thank you for coming on. It is...
Thanks for having me.
It's about 10 a.m. in Sydney, Australia. What time is it in currently New York?
It's about 7 p.m.
Oh, okay. Well, good evening. How's your night going?
Not bad. I'm actually just kind of out here watching the snow hit the ground and kind of plotting my next move.
Oh, very good. How long are you in New York for?
Another 3 or 4 days.
Well, awesome. Evan, thanks so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate your time. When this interview was kind of thrown Mumbrella's way, I kind of jumped at it because... Personally speaking, you know, I've worked in music media for the last 10 years and Fender is, you know, arguably the biggest brand in music. So I thought it was such a cool opportunity to chat with you. Before we get into it, as we always like to do, maybe just a general background of your story. First of all, like, how did you get into the industry? Why did you want to get into the industry? Let's start there and build forward.
Yeah, I'd say my road to Fender was kind of circuitous. I mean, I guess you got to go back to the beginning. I grew up playing sports and music as a kid all the way, you know, through high school and college. And you know, growing up in Eugene, Oregon, I had a father who happened to also be a piano player, and you know, he was from New Orleans, and so we'd get back to Louisiana on occasion in the summertime. But there was always music around in my house. But I also was really passionate about sports, in particular basketball. And, you know, I followed that passion, especially on the sports side, all the way into college and then overseas to Europe, where I was able to play professionally in Europe, in Germany and Hungary. Wow. But ironically, for a guy that grew up in Eugene, Oregon, which is where Nike started, I actually got a job working for Nike in Austria, working on their Eastern European business, of all things.
Wow. It's funny you mentioned that because Mumbrella 360 is coming up in May and it's being headlined by the former Nike CMO, Greg Hoffman. Did you have any work or time with Greg?
Yeah, I know Greg. He's a legend. He had a huge impact on Nike and I know he's got a book that he pushed out a couple years ago, but you know, Nike, I think Greg was pretty instrumental in standing up the entire brand design division at Nike in the early days, which gave it a real competitive advantage.
Yeah. You mentioned, obviously, you had a passion for sport, which explains how you kind of got into the Nike side of things, but you did mention that you were always a music fan as well. So, you know, I guess summarize the how, what, when, why of your journey to Fender. How did that come about?
Well, if you were to trace it back from 1995, when I started at Nike in Europe, and then you went all the way to 2008 when I left Nike, you know, along the way, I was able to take on one of my dream jobs at Nike, which was as the lead brand manager for Nike basketball. But after leaving Nike, after almost 13 years, moved the family from Portland down to Southern California and started to work on a brand called DC Shoes that was owned by Quiksilver at the time. I worked at Activision on the Guitar Hero brand. My joke there is, if you can't be a real guitar player, be a plastic guitar player.
Can you please bring Guitar Hero back? It is the greatest game that has ever existed. And it was so devastating when it just got out of date.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I think I joined the company after the game had jumped the shark.
Really?
Oh, for sure. That was a good learning for me. But actually, ironically, if you look at how things have evolved, it's all come for full circle. In fact, this week we just launched our in-game integration with Fortnite. I don't think they're going to mind me saying this, because that will come online, I think, after this is first pushed live. But pretty cool to see, you know, some Fender products being integrated into Fortnite. For the first time ever, players will be able to actually integrate Fender Stratocaster or a Fender P-Bass with their characters. So I've seen some of the initial renderings of this. I've seen a couple of the emotes. It's super cool. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. In fact, I've been hitting some of the forum threads over the last month. It's remarkable to see the number of existing Fortnite players who also are huge, passionate Stratocaster followers and Fender owners. So should be a lot of fun and a great way for us just to further expand the footprint and kind of dip our toes in a different space.
That's so cool. And again, you said there that, you know, making the jump from sporting brands to a music brand, and again, arguably the biggest music brand. I've always had conversations with people because, you know, again, I come from music media as well. I've spent the last decade, you know, working in film and TV and music and comedy. And then when you jump to something like marketing, people say, oh, what's the divide there? How did you make that leap? Was that a weird learning curve for you as far as this, I guess, the impression that you're working in sports, it has nothing to do with music. How can you apply what you did over there over here?
Yeah, I mean, I can talk about the merits of applying your athletic experience to your job, you know, until this podcast ends. But I think, you know, for me, the really interesting thing at being at Nike, and the reason I bring it up, is so much of how I think about brand building and connecting with consumers and developing businesses was really kind of inspired by what I learned at Nike. I had a lot of friends at the time who were going to business school and taking on other, you know, learning, you know, sort of getting their business degrees about marketing. And they were quoting these case studies, which inevitably involved Nike case studies, which inevitably were things I was either familiar with or seeing happen around me. And so as I kind of fell more in love with marketing, you know, when I left Nike, I wanted to keep doing it. And I think that's where, for me, it's always been about finding brands and opportunities where, you know, there's passion involved, but also where, you know, I can justify kind of the growth and expansion and development of those brands in the sense that it's going to make someone's life better, or it's going to add something to their lives or to culture, which I think ultimately, when you take a step back and you think about sports and music, few things can cross cultural lines. Few things can move the planet the way those two things do. And I think arguably music might be the single highest form of human expression, and also one of the strongest connectors across lines, whether they be political, demographic, geographic, or what have you. So for me, when the Fender opportunity came along, it was a huge opportunity to take a lot of those learnings over the years of developing brands and building businesses, combine that with my personal passion for music, to then join a company that was looking to, in effect, help evolve the way it was going to market and build a marketing function within this incredible legacy brand.
I know I got sidetracked there because you said Guitar Hero and Activision, and I got very excited. But what was that bridge between Activision and Fender? Was it a very boring cliche story of there was a role at Fender, you applied for it and got it, or was it much more grandiose?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think for anybody who, you know, has worked at a large company for a long time, then left and tried to figure out what your career is going to look like, when you're living it, it can be tough. And, you know, from the outside, it might look a little bit glamorous. But for me, I think probably the best way to say it was I didn't realize it, but I was probably in retrospect working my way towards Fender. And the reason I say that is, you know, after Nike, I went to DC Shoes, then I went to Activision, then I got involved in a startup, then I got involved in an agency, then I moved to another brand in New York. And if I hadn't done all those things, I don't know that I would have been considered for the Fender opportunity when it came along. Mm. But the other thing is, I remember when I left Nike and I was working at DC Shoes, and my wife and I were having one of those discussions about what are we going to do with ourselves. You know, she challenged me to think about what would be sort of the top three roles or top three ultimate dream jobs. And amazingly enough, in my top three was to someday be a leader of the Fender brand, just because I had so much affinity and passion for it. But at the time, you know, I assumed it was going to be when I got older, I could go market guitars to older people. Little did I know that the opportunity would come along a lot more quickly than that, and that I'd be in a position to help expand the aperture such that it isn't just about old players anymore. It's really about people of all ages, you know, who are kind of taking up the Fender brand now and using it in ways that 20, 30 years ago wasn't happening.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, what was your mindset when the Fender role came along? And by that, I mean, you know, you mentioned you've worked with startups, you've worked with agencies. Something like Fender is a juggernaut. It's not something where, hey, we need your help over here to build this brand up. What is your attitude to working with Fender? In your mind, what is the opportunity for you coming on board?
Yeah, personally, you know, I think it is rare that you come across brands that have a legacy of craftsmanship and a legacy of adoption with, in this case, the most creative class of people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, is musicians. But in that instance, hadn't really started telling the brand story, hadn't really invested yet in engaging with consumers directly. A lot of the work that the team at Fender had put into the brand was really mastering the art and craft of building the finest instruments in the world, especially on the electric guitar side, and then working really closely with artists to make sure that that was meeting the specifications of what the artists want, but also that it was being adopted by artists. And so when I was looking at the Fender brand, one of the things that they were looking for was someone who could come in and not only stand up a function, but also be a storyteller and really help invest in not only telling stories, but then building a community and connecting the brand to this organic passion that was already existing out around the world, whether it was with artists, influencers, media, players, collectors, or what have you.
Before we move on, you've mentioned that you are a passionate music fan. I've got to ask, what were your go-tos? Was there a specific genre? Was there specific bands or artists? What did you grow up on?
Well, so I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. And so when I tell you that I am a diehard early 90s alt rock kid at heart, that shouldn't surprise you. In fact, even to this day, when we, you know, every quarter, every half year at Fender, we have a tradition of band jams where employees will get bands together and can all play, and we'll rent out a bar. And that'll be sort of one of those nights where everybody will get to do something on stage. My set list always includes a vast majority of alt 90s rock. And I make no apologies for it. I love it. You know, it's somewhere in the background every time I'm kind of going through, you know, looking at my playlist for something. But yeah, back to, you know, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, you know, Nirvana, you kind of make that list, let it unroll. That's all my jam.
Yeah. And before we get into some of the artists that you've worked with at Fender, this year is obviously the 70th anniversary of the Stratocaster. First of all, congratulations. What does a milestone like that mean to not only the company, but to you as the CMO of it?
Yeah, this is a really exciting moment for us. You know, I think if I look at the first kind of the last 9 years since I've been here as CMO, you know, we've been steadily working to open the aperture of the brand to everyone who wants to play guitar. And I think in part that's been driven by the fact that the way that artists are using guitar today is more diverse than ever. It's not just classic rock for classic rock covers. It's being used in every possible form of expression, both on stage and in the studio. And by the way, the studio today, not only being defined as, you know, a pro-level studio with pro-level producers, but also a laptop where you've got a lot of younger people that are coming in, making beats, learning to create, and then falling in love with the guitar as sort of an authentic form of musical expression. And I think what's exciting about the Fender brand is as we've now grown our channels and we've grown the business and we've brought that many more people into guitar, I think just to give you an example, when I started I think our total social footprint was somewhere around 2 million people. 95% of that audience was over the age of 55, predominantly male, predominantly based in the US. We now have over 16 million people on our social channels, more than half outside the US, more than half under the age of 35, and a much more diverse and wide-ranging representation of what the brand looks and sounds like today. So I think as we've done all that work to really open up the aperture, we've also driven a ton of growth around the brand. We've seen the guitar adopted not only by more committed players than ever, but we've also brought more new players into the brand over the last 7, 8, 9 years than we have at any other time in the company's history. And so I say all that because, you know, the Stratocaster to this day probably remains one of the most important innovations that Leo Fender ever brought to market. If you talk to any artist, you know, they'll tell you that the versatility, the timeless design, the dependability and the quality of the tones that you can get out of the Stratocaster just vastly exceed pretty much every other guitar on the planet. You know, I think for us, what we also know about it is, and I say this with total humility, it is the most played, the most searched for, the most requested, probably the most sold, and most recorded guitar in music, which I think therefore might make it perhaps one of the most important instruments in the last 70 plus years that it's been on the planet. So, you know, for the 70th anniversary, one of the things we wanted to do was to celebrate the way that the Stratocaster is now being used. And that's reflected in the campaign that we're bringing to life and the marketing we're doing to both amplify a wide ranging number of artists across multiple genres, but also to reach out to our audience and our community and really invite them to participate in celebrating this iconic platform.
The artists that are associated with Fender is pretty phenomenal. You know, starting with little known artist Jimi Hendrix to to Nile Rodgers to Rage Against the Machine's Tom Morello to Australia's Tash Sultana. And it's funny you mentioned that, you know, like when you came on board, the audience was probably skewed to the older audiences because, you know, mentioned some of those names there, the Hendrixes, the Rogers. Tash Sultana, I believe, is in their early 30s at best, and they have had an incredible 5 to 10 years. Firstly, starting with those legacy acts, incredible iconic musicians. What does that mean for you, again, as a passionate fan? I got to imagine that Tom Morello specifically, as a 90s rock fan, that's got to strike a chord with you.
It does on many levels. In fact, when we launched a signature guitar with Tom Morello about 7 years ago, it's one of my favorite pieces of content, just watching him talk you through the way he uses the guitar, the way he thinks about it, you know, everything from the kill switch and the way he unplugs it and generates sound. But for him to talk about what it was like as a young kid growing up in the sounds that influenced his style. And when you realize that those sounds come from maybe not the best, and you know, he didn't have, you know, every advantage in his upbringing, to hear that translate into his music is incredible. And then you even understand him that much more as an artist. I think though, for us, you know, the fact that we're able to have Nile Rodgers, Tom Morello, you know, and Jimmy Vaughn in this piece is phenomenal, because I think it speaks to the legacy, credibility, the authenticity, the heritage of the Stratocaster. You know, the fact is we wanted to tip our cap to Jimi Hendrix, one of the most iconic Strat players of all time, and arguably one of the Strat players who has influenced more guitar players even to this day. But if you've ever played a Stratocaster or you've ever tried to learn to play electric guitar, Voodoo Child, which is one of his most famous recordings, I think everybody's tried to play some part of that song at some point. And so, you know, to choose that as a place for us to focus, I think was the natural choice. It was great to be able to have Jimmy there, you know, as Stevie's brother, who also has one of the most iconic recordings of that song. But then to layer in the younger artists on top of that and to see them interact and to see the way that all stitches together, I think it just speaks to the wide-ranging breadth of this instrument and the brand that can span generations and can span genres. For the 70th, like you've talked about, we are launching this 3-minute video piece with all of these artists. To the tune of Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. But we're doing some other things too. And when we think about launching any brand campaign, we recognize that we have this really passionate community. And whenever we get the chance to reach out and invite them to participate, we want to do that. So actually from April 22nd to June 22nd, we have a global Show Us Your Strat Love campaign that is inviting the community to share stories of the Stratocaster, how it's influenced them, the first Stratocaster they received, what they've recorded with it, the artists that they're inspired by. There's a variety of themes that will be taking place week in, week out, celebrating the 70th anniversary, but also giving them a chance to win prizes in return, one of which will be the chance to actually design their very own custom shop Stratocaster, which, if you know about the custom shop, is a pretty incredible opportunity for anybody. I think they're just an incredible group of craftsmen and luthiers who've really taken the craft of building the perfect Stratocaster to a whole other level. So we're excited for this, because when we've done things like this in the past, the outpouring and the response from the community has been tremendous. And I can't wait to see how people respond to that. We're also going a bit further with artists and launching something called Strat Sessions, which also features some of the more interesting and unique legends who've been a part of building the icon, the history of the Strat. And in the first installation, we've got two US-based artists, Buddy Guy and Kingfish, who are coming together in Chicago. And it's pretty powerful, because you get to see Buddy Guy, who is a legendary bluesman, as he would say, a Strat cat, sitting next to one of the younger, more powerful up-and-coming blues artists in Chris Stone, Kingfish, Ingram, and to see the two of them play and talk about what the Strat means to them. It's just super cool. And again, it's one of those things that we want to do in another way for us to tip a cap to an incredible icon like Buddy, while also recognizing the up-and-coming players who will be carrying that torch forward.
What's the secret to connecting those two generations, as far as, you know, to give you an example, one of my favorite bands of all time is Blink-182. They just toured Australia, and I've spoken to some people under 20 who are kind of like, oh yeah, I think I know them. We're talking only a decade apart. How do you connect the dots of artists who are 50, 60 years apart? How do you bring these audiences together under the one roof?
It's a great question. I mean, I think this is where I draw some of my parallels back to my Nike experience. You know, I think at Nike, one of the things that used to be said when I was there was that youth was our energy. And you know, there's an aspirational age that younger athletes aspire to be and older athletes wish they still were. You know, I think with music, there's a similarity there in that there's, I think, a sweet spot for a lot of people in terms of when they believe they're going to be at the peak of their creativity or when they're going to feel the most freedom of expression or the ability to find their voice. But I think the big difference between music and sports is you can play music for the entirety of your life. And it's a journey that never stops. You know, to borrow the Nikeism, there truly is no finish line. And so as an artist or as a musician or as somebody who's getting started, you know, you can be a beginner for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and that's great. And then you can evolve to the next tier of your own personal development. So I think for us, when we look at how we connect the brand to the world of music that's out there, I think it's really important that we stay true to the brand. We stay true to the authenticity of the individual expression. You know, as much as I might prefer alt 90s music, someone else who might prefer a different style of music to me is just as valuable, because I think as a brand, what we really want to do is show how guitar is being used in all the places that it can exist in music, because the brand is made more powerful by that. So, you know, sometimes I think we do come up against purists who still long for the days of classic rock and 12-minute rock songs that always play on radio. And, you know, I get it. I love some of that music too, but I am equally excited by young artists, especially artists in programs like Fender Next, who are coming up and sort of the 25 new faces of where music is going. Those artists are just as important for us to elevate, because they're also helping keep guitar relevant in music and culture.
Putting these campaigns together, then, is it fair to say authenticity is the most important thing? Because it's funny, I've chatting with Greg Hoffman about that. Nike and Fender are similar in the sense that when you guys can do these big campaigns, Nike can use Michael Jordan, they can use Tiger Woods, you guys can use Jimmy Vaughn and Tom Morello. There have been many mistakes in the past, and I use the recent example of Snoop Dogg teaming up with that the Fire Pit brand. Didn't turn out so well. And Is it simply because there is no connectivity there? We know, is Snoop Dogg the biggest Fire Pit fan? Maybe that's the reason it didn't work out. When you put a Fender campaign together, what are the most important things? And also, most importantly, what are the least important things that you put together when doing these campaigns?
Well, I think we definitely try to look at the global nature of music. And if you look at the Stratocaster 70th, you know, for example, in addition to those iconic artists, we have artists from all around the world. So to your point, Tosh is in the spot. And, you know, even talking to Tosh beforehand, you know, they were so focused on just making sure they were going to nail it. And no surprise, Tosh got on stage and just crushed it. I think dropped everybody's jaw. We've got an artist from Japan named Ray. She's an incredible artist, incredible style, you know, incredible sound. You know, and you look at, you know, Simon Neil from Biffy Clyro out of the UK, also a part of this campaign. So I think from a brand perspective, you know, music truly is universal. So we try to think about what's the universal insight, what's the universal connective tissue that we can lean into with this product. You know, certainly when you're launching a product, you've got to worry about how you're communicating the specs and the details and all of that. But I think for us, some of the things we try to consider, number one, how are we going to include artists in this effort authentically? You know, the difference between how Nike works with athletes and how we work with artists is, you know, we're not signing artists to 10-year contracts. What we put the work into is perfecting the instrument, making it as to the exact specifications of what they want for their craft, and then hoping and trusting that that effort and that energy is going to then turn into and translate into them, including it in the music they make. And I think that commitment from the brand over the years has given us this incredible position with artists where, by our count, roughly 85% of all the artists in the world who play on stage are probably playing a Fender guitar. And so then when you think about the campaigns that we're bringing to market, you know, we do want to make sure that we're also elevating the product. I think one of the early briefs when I first joined the company and we were looking at really elevating the storytelling was just pretty simple. It was two things. We want to develop creative and content and campaigns that are as thoughtful as the products that we make, knowing how much work goes into those products. But we also want to develop campaigns that artists will want to be a part of. Because if they want to be a part of it, then the organic sharing, the social pickup, the earned potential of it, it will be high. And let's face it, consumers today have a, let's just say that their bullshit meter is high. Try it again. Their bullshit meter is high, and we need to respect that, especially as a brand that's really focused on, you know, giving artists and musicians and aspiring players tools to really help them find their voice and to deliver that on a broad scale. And then outside of that, you know, we do all the things that you would expect from a global brand. You know, we look at all of our channels, we look at our social media footprint, our PR strategy, our digital strategy. We try to be as regional as we can, but we also globally recognize that when we drop something in the United States, it's instantly being picked up, you know, in Europe and in Asia. And I think, you know, that's the power of where we're at today from a digital standpoint, which is why we're also investing every time we launch in digital marketing tactics and strategies that will also help get the message out.
And just touching on consumers there and how important they are. When the most casual music fans, I think, would even know Fender and Gibson as the two big music brands, how has Fender been able to manage to continue to stand out in a market where it really is, as far as the guitar is concerned, these two big dogs kind of going head to head? How do you stand out? How do you keep that healthy competition alive, but continue to thrive still?
Well, I'm going to answer this in a way that might surprise you. I totally admire the products that Gibson makes from a guitar perspective. You know, there's some legendary instruments that are in there. But to be honest, we are a lot less focused on trying to compete against Gibson and a lot more focused on trying to open up, expand, and lead the industry. And the reason I say that is not because we want to dismiss what Gibson makes in any way, shape, or form. But I think the reason I say it is if you look at the last 9 or 10 years, no one has invested more in trying to grow the industry, grow the brand, open up the aperture, and bring more people in than we have. And that's not something we take lightly. We think that's part of our responsibility as the leader in this space. So, you know, when we're looking at building the Fender brand, we're spending less time on building the Fender brand versus Gibson, and a lot more time building the Fender brand for the artists, the players, the influencers that we're trying to connect with, to meet their needs, to satisfy their problems, to connect them more aggressively to each other. And a good example of that is the investment that we've put into introducing digital products like Fender Play and Fender Tune. Fender Play is a digital subscription app that is designed to help people learn to play guitar. It's targeting beginners, really, to help them onboard, learn, and become committed players for their lifetime. And we invested a lot of money in, you know, bringing together a world-class assortment of instructors, capturing a ton of content. And now we've made that available to anybody who wants to get started. We're going to be bundling that later this year with some new products that are going to be ultimately designed for new players. And we're going to be pushing that even further. I think, you know, a great example of how that's come to life for us was when the pandemic hit back in 2020. Fender Play was about 3 to 4 years old at the time. You know, we were charging on a full subscription basis for people who wanted to be in it. But we had a conversation internally that led us to decide to offer Fender Play for free to anyone who wanted to give it a try for 30 days. And we thought maybe 10,000 people would take us up on the offer, maybe 20,000. We had almost a million people take us up on that offer within the first 30 days. And, you know, that was a moment in time that probably won't be repeated. But, you know, what we saw from that was the tremendous built-in excitement and enthusiasm and interest in playing guitar. So I think as we move forward, you know, we are really trying to play at both ends of the spectrum. We are trying to continually raise the bar with the products that get made to meet the needs of artists and to help innovate and take that to new places. But we're also thinking about how we can bring more new people into the category so that, you know, we can go from the industry sometimes acting like a gatekeeper and keeping people from getting started because it's an intimidating environment, to actually being a much more welcoming and enticing and inviting experience, where just because you can't even play Smoke on the Water yet doesn't mean that you have to put the guitar down. In fact, it takes time. You know, for some people, it takes a year just to learn the first song, whereas some people take to it naturally, and we want to embrace all of that.
So is it fair? I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but is it fair to say for brand markers who are listening to this right now that try not to worry about the competition, just try making what you're doing the best that it can be? Is that the kind of the key message here as far as competing in a really a very competitive market?
Yeah, I mean, I think for all the kind of marketers and business people who are tuning in, you know, of course we go through the strategic planning process. Of course we look at, you know, channels and segments. Of course we think about, you know, where the innovation needs to hit at what time of year, with which audiences, with which points of distribution. So, you know, all of that happens. And we do look at all the categories in which people participate to, you know, really figure out what the share opportunities are and where the innovation opportunities are. So I think in that sense, you know, we're very attuned to what the competition is doing. We do get competitive, but I think the bigger point is when developing the Fender brand and thinking about what the Fender brand can stand for. I think in our case, because the fundamental innovation of the Fender brand was to make the guitar more accessible to more people, all the way back in 1951, when Leo Fender invented the bolt-on neck, which made it possible for people to customize and modify the guitar however they wanted to. We believe that what we need to focus on is really telling the Fender brand story, building the Fender brand experience, getting it right with artists, with influencers, with creators, and with players, and being good at welcoming new people into the brand. If we can do all of that right, stay true to the brand, and stay true to the authentic relationships that we have with the artists that we're serving, we think that's the formula that's going to help us grow. And thus far, it absolutely has.
Well, Evan, before you go, I do want to end on, I guess it's a cliche question, but I'll do it anyway. Has there been a particular campaign that you've worked on that is the most memorable, maybe for good or bad? Is it because you got to hug Tom Morello? Is it one that, you know, the campaign actually didn't go the way you hoped? Is there one that sticks out or a story that you want to share about why it is the most memorable for you?
Well, I love the question. It's going to be a cliched answer for me, which it's really hard for me to pick. I can say one of the true pleasures of my job is that we come into contact with so many great stories on such a regular basis. We've had a blast telling some of these stories, but if I had to pick out a few, I would say, let me just touch on three. I think when I first arrived, one of the very first signature projects we did was a pink shell base with Flea of the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Sure.
And, you know, in working through how we were going to launch the base, he was adamant that his daughter was involved in the content creation. And we kept saying, no, Flea, we're going to get involved. We'll help. We'll build it. He said, no, we got it. So we had a series of production meetings. In the end, he ended up shooting the video by himself with his daughter at his house in Malibu. And what came back was better than anything we could have scripted. who knew Flea was a beekeeper? And, you know, there's video of him dancing on the roof of his house. But the authenticity of what he delivered was powerful. And it was a good early kind of hint for me that, you know, really empowering these artists that we work with to tell their story was going to be a really interesting formula. So I think that was powerful. I think flash forward all the way to 2020, and another signature project was when we launched the Her signature guitar, which, you know, we talked about opening up the aperture and expanding the brand, was the first signature guitar for a Black female artist in Fender's history. And, you know, rightly so, you know, just incredible artist, incredible performer, so much potential, so much upside. And then to see her play that at the Super Bowl six months later, you know, was incredible. And I think since then, what I've really enjoyed seeing is the number of girls in particular who have identified, you know, her as an icon and as an inspiration, as a reason for them to get involved in guitar, which is powerful. So those are the two signature stories I think that I would sort of bookend. And in between, we've had so many product launches. I think one of my favorite, in addition to what we're going through now, would be the American Professional Series 2 launch, also back in 2021. We had a tagline for that launch, which was the one for all. And it was a series of guitars from Strats to Tellys, P basses, J basses. But I think what was so cool about that launch is we were able to include and incorporate a global family of artists across the board, with a really strong social media push, a strong paid push, a strong PR strategy. And we had artists send us notes from countries we don't normally hear from to say how thankful they were to see that the Fender brand was including artists that look like them in its brand messaging.
Wow.
I've just always believed, you know, who you elevate and who you amplify says a lot about what you stand for, which is one of the reasons why it's as important for us to celebrate the legacy artists as it is to showcase the diversity and breadth of where guitar is going.
Well, Evan, thank you so much again for coming on the show. I could talk to you all day. Well, my day, your evening. But I know you want to enjoy some of the snow. Thank you again for coming on, man. It was great to chat to you.
Hey, it's my honor. It's great to be here. Thank you for the interest. And I'd be happy to talk about guitars all day long.
Well, look, I'll bring you back on the show, or you could just fly to Sydney. That would really help us out.
I'm down for both.
Evan, thanks so much, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Neil.
That's our episode. Thank you so much for listening this week, and thank you to Evan Jones and the Fender team for putting this together. For more details on everything you heard in this chat, including some of the cool projects Fender are working on, including the collaboration with Fortnite, be sure to check out Fender.com. And as always, to stay up to date with everything happening in Australia's media and marketing industry, head over to mumbrella.com.au. I'm Neil Griffiths, and we'll be back again next week to do it all again. See you then.
Podcast edit by Abe's Audio.